You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, February 16th, 2017.
The reason I started really writing was I was auditioning for things, and I was tired of being a girlfriend or an ingenue or those things in auditions, and I wanted to do something fun.
Actor and writer Emily Goodson talks about her new comedy, now in pre-production at the Bloomington Playwrights Project. That's later in the show in today's edition of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion program, Voices of the Street asks if Bloomington believes the scientific consensus on climate change. But first, these local headlines.
Members of the Bloomington Solidarity Network denounced recent local economic development efforts in a city council meeting last night. The Solidarity Network is a volunteer group with a stated mission to fight for the rights of tenants and workers. Most of the group's work involves helping tenants who are facing eviction or are otherwise having trouble with landlords. But recently, the group has also been critical of the city government's plans for a certified technology park in downtown Bloomington. Adam Scouten is a member of the Solidarity Network.
Over time, we have realized that it does us little good just to fight these individual battles. If we truly wish to defend the interests of the poor and working people, we must take on the bigger picture. We must reverse the tide. We have spent the last year studying the tech park, spreading the word about it on the Near West Side, and dismantling the ruse of the economic prosperity it will bring. But truth be told, the tech park will bring prosperity. But not prosperity for the working people of Bloomington. Instead, the prosperity is reserved for those who already possess significant resources. It will make a deplorably unequal city more unequal.
Proponents of the tech park, including Mayor John Hamilton, say companies will bring high-paying jobs into the city, which they expect to improve the local economy. But Solidarity Network argues that working-class residents are unlikely to qualify for the technology jobs. Instead, they say the development will drive up housing costs, including in areas of downtown where housing is currently most affordable. The network held an event to discuss the issue on January 7th. Another member of the network, William Van Den Dries, told the council last night that the tech park is a part of a larger problem.
So many things are changing in the city so quickly. In the months since our tech park event, several major changes have occurred that illustrate the tendency of Bloomington's current economic and social course. Just a few. Athena, a 30-year-old store now located on the square, is being forced out of business after a 70% rent hike, making what was a struggling but profitable business bankrupt. Our downtown recycling center is being forced out of its location for future tech park development, with the city doing nothing to help them relocate. The Monroe County's Community School Board announced that it would be outsourcing independent contractor bus driving jobs to a private company headquartered in Michigan, laying off between 20 and 30 people who have driven for our schools for over 30 or 40 years. And just this last week, it was announced that the city's other major gentrification project, the Switchyard Park, would take 2 more years and cost $5 million more dollars to complete than what was estimated. All of these stories illustrate symptoms of the very kind of economic development of which we are so critical.
Members of the Solidarity Network also took aim at some of the city's recent deals with housing developers. Member Matthew Gias critiqued an agreement with the builders of a new 146-bedroom complex on the site of the old Chocolate Moose. The council negotiated with that developer, which agreed to set aside 15 bedrooms for what is called workforce housing. A one-bedroom workforce housing unit is expected to cost $641 per month, which Gias says is not affordable for many residents.
After weeks of negotiations with the developers of this high-rise apartment that will stand on the Chocolate Moose property, out of 146 bedrooms total, only 15 will specifically be affordable. And in return, the property owner will receive a 10-year tax abatement. This deal has been widely celebrated by city council members. If you're making slightly above state minimum wage and living in one of these affordable housing units, that means that you would be devoting over half of your yearly income to rent alone. This is the city's answer to Bloomington's housing crisis. This is the model that will be heralded and repeatedly applied to future development projects at the expense of Bloomington's working community.
The Solidarity Network members made their statements during the public comment portion of last night's City Council meeting.
Plans for a multifamily development on the Bloomington Southwest Side received mixed responses from Bloomington Plan Commission members last week. This week, the 8-acre parcel at 2182 West Tap Road was originally set aside for commercial use as part of the Woolery Mill planned unit development approved in the early 90s. Regency Consolidated Residential is now asking that the land be designated for multifamily development. Councilmember Andrew Sybor asked Regency CEO Jim McKinney to clarify why the parcel was not viable for commercial development.
Number one is that the number of rooftops, as I would call it in our business, there's not enough adequate around this area. If you look at the remaining area, further full development would not be able to occur there to have enough. There is a lot of competition on Interstate 69, which is about 4 minutes away by travel time on it. And there's other retail areas that are also nearby. 8 acres doesn't create enough of a size to have a synergy as you would see like on Sayre Road or Mall Road or you do on 37.
McKinney added that internet shopping is putting a dent in local retail. McKinney also said he expects the completion of I-69 will mean an increased demand for easily accessible housing for professionals working in that corridor. Regency is looking to create a neighborhood of 1- and 2-bedroom units that would essentially be an extension of the nearby Adams Village apartment complex. Regency's attorney, Mike Carmen, said the new development is not student-oriented.
The people we're looking for here are people who are coming home from work, not coming to an apartment. They're coming home. These are larger, 1,430 square feet on the 2-bedroom. These are not student-oriented apartments at all. The amenities don't speak to that market niche at all. It speaks to a much different type of market niche with the concentration of 1 and 2 bedrooms of a different type of person here, commuting to Crane, commuting elsewhere, young professionals, maybe somebody who's not interested in buying a home, but they want a home to go to on a rental basis that's more than just finding an apartment someplace.
10% of the bedrooms in the development are expected to be set aside for workforce or affordable housing. McKinney said Regency representatives are working with Bloomington's Housing and Neighborhood Development Department on monitoring and reporting requirements. Commission member Jillian Kinsey expressed concern about a lack of public transportation on that leg of Tap Road, which case manager Eric Grulich confirmed.
Bus service is not on Tap Road or Adams Street. Currently, the Bloomington Transit is operating at peak capacity. We probably expect at some point in the future when Adams Street gets extended that there will be bus service provided through here. They do come close to the area along Rockport Road and pick up along that area, but I do not think that they get close to this area just due to the amount of traffic and high intensity that they do have.
Commission members also discussed the development of the neighboring Mill Creek PUD located to the west of the Woolery Mill PUD. Developer Steve Brehab of Smith Brehab and Associates said with the expected completion of I-69, Mill Creek developers will soon be presenting plans for Mill Creek to be developed commercially.
Right now we're going to bring the first phase of Mill Creek in. It's 25 lots. The list of uses for the PUD, as Eric had mentioned, is runs the gamut from commercial office to industrial. The interesting thing about Mill Creek is in seeing how the first portion was developed, where you have lots that would front directly on Tap Road, this next piece that we're going to bring forward does the same thing. You'll have commercial lots that front directly on Tap Road at a new signalized intersection. There's a signalized intersection being installed at Deborah Drive and Tap Road.
Commission member Nicholas Kappas said it seemed possible that Regency could develop the Adams Street parcel commercially, given the commercial development plan for the Mills Park PUD. Other commission members, Brad Whistler and Les Coyne, supported the residential development. Others raised concerns. Commission member Isabel Piedmont-Smith asked developers to consider using solar panels on south-sloping roofs. Carol Goulas asked for more detail on the developer's green building practices before the Plan Commission reviews the site again on March 6th.
The Indiana Department of Transportation is looking for new members for its Americans with Disabilities Act Community Advisory Working Group. People with disabilities, or those who work with people with disabilities, are encouraged to apply. Advisory group members will provide information and recommendations pertaining to the state's ADA transition plan. The transition plan includes efforts to make those with disabilities more included in public events and transportation. The plan outlines INDOT's policies and practices in making Bloomington more accessible. Individuals interested in becoming members can submit a letter of interest and a resume before Wednesday, March 1st, to Aaron Hall. The email address is at ehall@indot.in.gov. No application form is needed. Only a letter of interest and a resume are required. The next ADA Advisory Group meeting will be held at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, February 22nd. The meeting will be held in the upstairs conference room at INDOT's district office. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
An actor, playwright, and proud jokester, Emily Goodson has made her mark in Bloomington Theater. She's written the new musical comedy Calling All Kates, now in pre-production at the Bloomington Playwrights Project. She and her husband, Cardinal Stage Company's managing director Gabe Glowden, have chased the theater life around the country and now call our town home again. Goodson once played an electric mixer making smoothies in her mouth on stage. She talks about it all as she joins host Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week, the playwright, the actor, the funny person, Emily Goodson. Emily, thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Are you nervous?
I am nervous.
Why?
I am like my mother, so whenever I get nervous, I talk too much, and I have a lot of secrets, so I'm worried that they're going to come out.
You have written the play.
Yes.
That's coming up next at the Bloomington Playwrights Project, Calling All Kates.
Yes, I did.
It's a musical.
It is a musical.
And it's funny.
It should be. Fingers crossed it's funny. I think it's funny.
Most of what you've done has been funny.
I tolerate drama better when it's delivered through a comedic lens.
Who is Kate, or who are Kates?
Kate, there are many Kates. Calling All Kates is the story actually about a man named Mark, who you may have heard the actual story that it's loosely based on, about a guy who was supposed to get married, and he had purchased tickets around the world for his honeymoon with his fiance, and only weeks before the wedding, she dumped him. And because he wasn't able to get a refund on his plane tickets, he put an ad out on Reddit looking for a woman with the exact same name and a U.S. passport to go and take over these plane tickets for him and go essentially on this trip around the world with him. So it's loosely based on that. So we took the similar story that it's a guy named Mark who was engaged, was dumped, and in order to not lose all of his money, he put out an ad for a number of Kates. So Calling All Kates, that's the title. And the play opens with the introduction of the Kate that he chose.
Now, how long have you been doing this playwriting business?
I've always loved to write. I wrote mostly fiction, though, throughout college. And then the Bloomington Playwrights Project has always been a place very near and dear to my heart. And, I was there through, I remember, Richard Ford, Richard Perez. And then when Chad came on, I took on a little bit more of I went from acting to, he had me write a few things with the Blizzard.
That would be Chad Rabinovitz, who is the artistic director.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, the former managing director was Gabe Glowden, I ended up marrying.
I'm going to give you a quote from your very mouth.
Oh, no.
According to an interview in something called The Fourth Wall.
Oh, they may have had to edit that for cuss words. Let's hear the quote and we'll see what goes.
I'm not a good writer. I'm a total fraud. What I'm good at is telling jokes.
I always wrote for fun. The reason I started really writing was I was auditioning for things and I was tired of being a girlfriend or an ingenue or those things in auditions, and I wanted to do something fun. So I started writing my own monologues, and then I started writing plays here and there. And then I did a play with Monroe County Civic Theater back during the Director's Forum. I think this was 2002 I wrote a play. And they were wonderful. They let me they let me do that. Yeah. And then Chad was the one who really gave me my first shot. I had written a play called Lady Bits. And it was three female characters that I wanted to play. And it was just a funny story about a girl who was going through a divorce because she and her husband weren't connecting sexually, and she had never really experienced, had a good sexual experience. So she hires a prostitute, doesn't specify male, so they send a female, and that female prostitute who she hires happens to have a stalker. And the stalker shows up as well. So it's three women in a hotel room and a big conversation about sex.
This is not a porn video.
No. This is a slapstick comedy. So I wrote that. And then Chad, we took that to the Indie Fringe Festival in 2012, actually. And then I was offered the opportunity to work with Jeremy Schoenfeld on a new musical, which was Spun, which opened then in 2013 or 14 at the BPP. Spun is the first musical I ever wrote, that I ever book wrote.
There was this tiny playlet you have done.
Do you mean the Blizzard plays?
They're like a minute or 90 seconds.
Oh, that's
or
my
whatever.
Forte. That's what I love. The 1 minute plays. You have to have 1 minute play, 1 to 2 minute plays.
Yeah.
And it has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
And that's where I sort of found my feet as a writer. But that's where I always joke that I'm not a writer. I just look for a way to get my jokes out.
Uh-huh.
My favorite was the one we did. We did Bird Rap, which was a rap about birds. And then Time Machines Can Be Funny Sometimes, about a guy who acquired a time machine, and instead of using it to do anything magnanimous, he used it to go forward in time to tell jokes that people would say, oh, that's too soon. So he would go 10 years in the future and try to tell his joke again.
Who do you like comedian-wise?
I will always be a Tina Fey, Amy Poehler. I like Amy Schumer, but Tina Fey sort of holds my heart. But, and partially because she started out as a writer.
Yeah.
And took sort of the opposite way that I took. I'm a big fan of her. There's another blogger out of Chicago who I think is really interesting, and she writes a lot of comedy. Samantha Irby, who I think is really funny.
Uh-huh.
And these are all females. There are men, too. I'm a big Louis C.K. fan, always.
So you like to laugh.
Oh, I love to laugh.
Does Gabe Gloden like to laugh?
Oh, no, he's very dark. No, he loves to
laugh.
He's
very dark.
But one of the things I always say, the three reasons that I married him is that he's funny and smart. That's two reasons, but in one.
Yeah.
And he can cook.
Wow.
And I always say he has a hot bod because I just love him.
But... You know, you're lucky you married him, because I'd go for him.
Oh, I know.
Given those assets.
Whew, we figured out very quickly that we lived well together, because I like to clean and he likes to cook. And so he feeds me and I clean up after him. And it's a very good match. We moved in together very quickly when we weren't quite very new. We were very new in our relationship. I think we had only been dating maybe a month or two before we moved in together. And
wow.
Yeah, we
love
were,
at first sight,
it was,
as it were.
We'd known each other for several years, but we didn't get along very well. And then,
you didn't?
No, we weren't quite...
was blood drawn at all in any way?
Or? No, but we were not... People didn't really want us to work together because we argued a lot and we didn't really like each other very much. And then... after,
well, no wonder you got married.
Yeah, we ended up, who would have thought? So we went on a few dates. I think it was summer of 2010, something around that. And then we moved in together because I needed a roommate. And we just thought, well, let's make it or break it. Let's see if this works. So we decided to do it, and it happened to work.
Do you have any training in improv?
I don't. I get really nervous unless I'm prepared.
Uh-huh.
So I like to be prepared, and I...
Well, that'll knock that right out
of you. Oh, yeah. And those improv people are artists. To be able to have that sort of confidence and just get it out, that and I think that there's something about timing to get something out. I'm not capable of doing it.
Changes your whole life.
Changes your whole life. Well, it's a social tool too, because then, you know, once you learn to improv, you can learn how to go, deliver a speech or have a conversation with someone you don't know. I'd probably be much more equipped for this interview.
Emily Goodson, playwright, actor, funny person, author of Calling All Kates, that will be at the Bloomington Playwrights Project, March 31st to April 15th. Emily, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glob at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, do you believe in climate change and do you think that it is caused by us? It is February and unusually warm for our area. In fact, some think there has hardly been any winter at all in southern Indiana. As strange weather seems to occur more and more often, one has to wonder whether it is all due to climate change. We have asked your friends and neighbors whether they believe in climate change and whether they think that humans are to blame.
Yes, I do. I'm a scientist, so I believe in facts.
Yes, absolutely. Because it's science and not a question.
Global warming, I mean, it's possible. It is possible because, I mean, if you look at a satellite imagery of the Earth 100 years ago versus the Earth now, humans have made a big difference on impact. So people say we can't make an impact. We have. So yes, it is possible.
Well, honestly, I think that it's definitely something that's going to be happening if it hasn't, you know, truly happened already. Because the way the world is, I mean, definitely people know, you know, whether they believe in creation or whether they believe something else, it's definitely already happening around us. I personally think it's something similar to El Nino and that whole effect. It's definitely happening, and people kind of need to be watchful for it.
I definitely think global warming exists. The question of, is it caused by us? It's hard to refute a lot of the evidence that's out there that we're certainly adding to it. It's also tough to say because we've only been tracking global temperatures since the 1880s. So with only 140 years worth of data, it's hard to say, especially from an uneducated standpoint, what's true. I believe our scientists, and I believe that they're all doing everything they can in their power to prove that.
Yes, I do believe that. I think that all these record high heat days and then just the difference in how the seasons are happening is a solid thing for it.
I definitely think there's a correlation, but I'm not scientific enough to prove that, but I do think there's a correlation, definitely.
I do believe, ma'am, that climate change does exist. But I believe, ma'am, it is something that the human condition plays very little in that. Temperatures go up, they come down. I mean, there have been a record warmth, you know, in the early 1900s, late 1800s, before we had, you know, used fossil fuels, etc. So I believe we've had cold snaps even today, whatever. So I do believe there is, you know, climate's constantly changing. So, but I don't believe that the human condition has very little to do with it.
Yes, I do. All the pollution and things that we put in the air, definitely.
I assume that we are a major cause or contributor, and it's obvious to me that it's real. I travel the world. I work in the Philippines a lot, and the weather, it was too cold to go swimming 2 months ago, which should have been fine. So, yeah, you know, it's kind of turning spring here, and it's February. Yeah, so of course.
Yes. I believe in global warming, and I think that it's caused by the greenhouse gases that humans are producing. And that we are the major contributor to it. And although the Earth's climate is like cyclical and it does change over time, there's plenty of proof out there of the time scale of it, of the cycles increasing due to human interaction.
Yes, I do. Emissions, gas, we drive too much, we don't walk enough. Yeah, I do.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provowski. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme, Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.